Welcome to the Millionaire Cookbook. I'm your host, Mohammed Sabri, and I'm looking to provide you with $1 million worth of value in a single podcast. All right, hello everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Cookbook. This is episode 11, and today we have the second athlete featured on the show as of now. We have Richard Cho, aka Pug the Goat. We go into his name at the beginning of the episode, don't worry. But Richard, he is an IPF world level powerlifter. So if you don't know what that means, IPF, that is the pretty much the pinnacle of drug-free powerlifting. And he was able to qualify for the world championships, represent the United States. And yeah, he was able to go in and place second at the meet for the 74 kilo junior class. He goes more into that and the rest of his story in the podcast, but he is a very strong guy. Deadlifts well over 700 pounds, squat over 600, and he benches in the high 300s. But I believe recently he benched 400. I'm not too sure, but either way, really strong guy, especially for his age and his body weight. You guys are really going to like this, especially all the gym goers out there, especially my powerlifters. So yeah, Richard, he's been someone that I've been looking up to for powerlifting, and I know a lot of other people look up to him as well. So it was a pleasure having him on. We had a really good conversation. It's all powerlifting oriented, and we also talk about some mindset stuff and discipline as well. So hope you guys enjoy. Hope you guys get a lot of value out of it, and enjoy the episode. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Cookbook. Today, we're joined by Richard Cho, a.k.a. Pug the Goat. So, Richard, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, man. Thank you for having me on this.
Of course, of course. So before I get into anything, how did you come up with the name Pug?
Oh man, I don't know what to say. It's as simple as I like pugs, but I feel like eventually started catching on as I started getting a little bit more of a following on Instagram. People just started calling me Pug, and at that point, when people start calling you Pug, you can't really change it, right?
Yeah. So it's just a nickname that pretty much stuck ever since you kind of just started with it.
Yeah, it's short, it's simple, three letters, right? And if people, you know what's funny is like most people don't even know my real name. They just call me Pug. So if they see me in the streets, they say, hey, what's up, Pug? And I'm like, oh, that's probably me. But funny. I won't be getting confused.
Yeah, for sure. So how about you just kind of hop into your background and, you know, ever since you started lifting, how you got to where you are right now, etc. So just give us a whole rundown.
Mm-hmm. So I started lifting in high school, which wasn't necessarily powerlifting. Funny enough, my first meet going into senior year of high school was a 100% raw meet. For those of you that don't really know what that federation is, it's pretty much one of the older federations that have been basically displaced by the USAPL, USPA, and other federations of that nature. But, I wasn't really into powerlifting. It was more of a hobby at that point. And I didn't really know that there were things such as USAPL Raw Nationals. And I'm sure most of you have gotten confused between the federations, as have I. But as I went through college, I was studying to become a physician, so pre-med route. And I continued to work out. All this not as serious as I am taking it now. But when I first entered and participated in my first USAPL meet, which was back in senior year of college, I qualified for Raw Nationals. I competed in Raw Nationals, and I was able to make the team as an alternate lifter for the 74 kg weight class, which was great. And essentially from that point on, that's when I started taking things incredibly seriously and started putting a lot more focus on it. Took coaching a lot more seriously as well, because in my opinion, if you're a good coach, a lot of the times much of the principles that you put into coaching follow you as a lifter. And that's essentially how it's led me to the position that I'm in now. Right now, because of COVID, I haven't been able to take my MCATs, which is the entrance exams for med school. But at this point in my life, I feel like I might have to push that off and pursue, you know, powerlifting full time, both as a coach, as an entrepreneur, doing things such as the Lead Tribe, One Hund, for, you know, I guess I'll say it here, but Game Day, which is something that me and a few other guys have been considering and developing, and that's the extent that I can tell you right now. But a lot of things are going on, and right now I'd be foolish to split my time in further and try to do something as difficult as going into med school.
100%. Yeah, especially because we're all still so young right now. So if we want to take risks, especially in the entrepreneur space, right now would be the time, especially because school, it's pretty much always going to be there for us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in school, I think I did well enough, and I feel good enough that I can leave this alone for now. And if I want to come back and pick it up in the future, I should be ready. I've really kind of did everything I need to in terms of building my resume, having a good GPA, doing well, having a relationship with my professors. So, you know, if things backfire, which I don't expect it to, that's what's there for me.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Awesome. So how about we just touch on how come you chose the sport of powerlifting specifically once you started to get more active in the gym and stuff? You know, you can talk about, you know, how you feel accomplishment wise, what it does to you physically, mentally, how it impacts your life positively, all that stuff.
Okay. How did I get into powerlifting? It really, like I said before, I wasn't really aware of all the federations and how competitive powerlifting really was. But how it started was that whenever I would go to the gym, I would try to push myself on the squat, bench, and deadlift. And, you know, no surprise, I ended up doing a lot better than I had thought that I would. So, you know, that really sprouted this interest in strength training. And I always wanted to get myself to have the best one rep maxes on the squat, bench, and deadlift. And when I started getting notable numbers, I started looking into other people within this strength sport and kind of comparing myself and seeing how far I could take it. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I feel like that's how a bunch of us get into it. We're really focused on getting stronger every time we step in the gym. And then eventually we kind of just want to put that up to display on the platform. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely how I got into it. So.
Yeah. No, it's you know, I can't really say it's like any other sport. It's very different in that you have to take responsibility for everything that happens to you. It's not a team sport. If you succeed, it's all you and potentially your coach and anyone that's helped you. But if you fail, you can't really blame anyone else, right? It's all up to you, man.
Yeah, just like any other individual sport. Like, let's take boxing, for example. If you get knocked out or you slip up or you end up choking, you know, it's not the coach's fault. It's not, you don't have a teammate to blame. It's just you and who you're competing against. And I feel like powerlifting, it's pretty much the same thing, except for boxing, you're getting hit and you're hitting other people. Whereas powerlifting, it's more objective. You're dealing with numbers on the bar.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. In terms of the differences between those two sports is that for powerlifting, it's really just a number, right? You can't dispute a number. You can dispute depth, judges' calls. But in the end, if everything is legal, right, there's no subjective aspect to someone squatting 600 versus someone squatting 606, right? The mm-hmm. individual squatting 606 ends up with a higher total because they squatted 2 kg or 6 pounds more.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, that's what I like more about, you know, strength sports such as powerlifting and strongman compared to something like bodybuilding. Bodybuilding, it's all about looks, and looks can be subjective depending on who the judges are at that time. They'll think one person looks better than the other. Whereas, like you said, for strength sports, it's all about numbers. You know, if someone squats more than the other, you can't debate that. Obviously, there's stuff like depth and like commands and stuff, but as far as numbers go, you can't argue that.
Yeah, it's very appealing to be able to track your progress definitively, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you see a jump between your squat and it's 330 pounds to 360 pounds, you know that you've made progress. Whereas in bodybuilding, it's a little bit more nuanced than that.
Yeah, especially because accentuating your muscles, your proportion, all that, it takes a lot longer than adding like 5 pounds to your squat, for instance, depending on like how strong you are.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Awesome. So let's just jump into your training ideology. So how do you really, you know, without giving too much away, I guess you can say, because I know you do coaching, but mm-hmm. as far as, you know, periodization goes, how you go about selecting exercises, how does that kind of look like on a week-to-week basis?
Week-to-week, really, I think what I could say about my training that encompasses everything that I've done so far is that change is good. Mm-hmm. You know, for the last year or so, I've been on incredibly high frequency, 7 days a week, 2 to 3 hours a day training protocol, and that works very well. Right. Whereas now I'm training 4 to 5 times a week, a little under 2 hours per day. And I would say that my frequency and volume is at my all-time lowest. But I could argue that I've only gotten better since incorporating that. So in the end, experimentation is the best thing. Right. Trial and error, doing different things to see what works best for your body at that time and place. So you'll never see me doing the same thing for an extended period of time, because I will always be changing things up to try to get a lot more data about myself.
Mm-hmm. So over 2 hour workouts, that's quite a lot of time to spend in the gym. Are you like hitting accessories or anything after your main movements?
Yeah, most of the time I am. And usually I work out in the gym in my garage. So for those 2 hours, I'm sweating so much, right? Trying to rehydrate as much as possible. You'll see me taking upwards of 10 grams of salt every single day, just to prevent cramping, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like I wouldn't be at the level that I'm at right now if I didn't at the very least put in that much work, mm-hmm. right? Especially with all the things I'm doing outside of powerlifting. If I can't put in that much, I don't think I really deserve to be in a top level position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And I agree with what you said about, you know, change is good in lifting. Especially because, you know, if you do the same thing over and over again, not only is your body going to adapt to it and you're going to stall, but mentally, it's just, there's a lot of mental fatigue as well, you know, doing the same thing over and over. You're going to get bored. You're not going to be as motivated. So like for me, for instance, I know this is very frowned upon in the raw community, but I run a variation of the conjugate method, you know, I just, yeah. And, you know, we're changing the max effort lift every week, and then the accessories switch up, you know, every couple months or so. And, you know, mentally that does really good for you, because, you know, you look forward to something new very frequently instead of, you know, just doing a squat, bench, deadlift every single time you step in and all you do is like change the rep ranges a bit.
Yeah, it's a good format. I used to run conjugate myself for the first 5 to 6 years of my training life. I had self-coached, so it's something I've dabbled in. And like you said, it absolutely is great for the mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Doing the same thing over and over can be really taxing and often leads to burnout, especially without changes in volume or frequent deloads. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily against conjugate. And if it works for you, it works for you.
100%. Yeah, like I've seen people in the raw community run it and completely screw it up. Whereas for me, it adds numbers to my big three pretty quickly. Like obviously I'm not like an elite lift or anything, but you know, I'm obviously past the novice stage, and you know, as an intermediate lifter, it's been working. I feel like in powerlifting, you just got to see what works for you. If something like linear works for you, stick with that. If like DUP works, stick with that. You know, it's all about, it's an individual sport at the end of the day. So you get to, the ball's kind of in your court. So
yeah. And often you'll see many elite lifters going back to the basics, AKA linear, for their off season or even on season. So who's to say that conjugate isn't the most optimal method for you for that time, that period in time. So just do whatever you can, experiment, and everything's just a trial and error process.
Yeah, I really like how you brought that up, because the majority of the year I'll be running conjugate, but closer to a meet, I'll go to like a more linear approach, because I feel like that's a lot better for peaking for a meet, just because as the volume's decreasing, the intensity is increasing. So It's very practical in that sense.
Right.
Awesome. So jumping right into social media, how about you talk about your experiences? Because obviously you're a pretty notable figure in the space, you know, alongside guys like, you know, Russ Wolf, Brett Gibbs, Taylor Atwood, you know, just to name a few. So how has that kind of impacted your training?
the way you enjoy powerlifting in general. I guess you can say at competitions as well, just kind of the general experiences compared to, you know, just someone that kind of just lifts on their own, doesn't document anything. And yeah, so go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'm very flattered that you brought up those individuals alongside myself, right? They're absolutely goal, right? The things that Russ has been doing, you know, I always give him flack for a lot of things, but I do see myself getting up to that level. I'll be grinding, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, right? Always trying to venture into new spaces. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people on social media, on Instagram, think that I'm the type of person to really devote my life to Instagram and really put a lot of my energy and mental energy into that application. But especially since, you know, people consider me the trash talker of Instagram, of the USAPL and IPF community, which is sure, fine. That, like, you can say anything you want about me. But in the end, right, how I run my personal life, I feel like I dissociate my myself very well from Instagram. Whatever I put on Instagram really doesn't affect me that much realistically, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the banter and trash talk, I say it, but I don't really mean it, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
It definitely helps me competitively, but I'm not going to tie any of my self-worth to that stuff or to Instagram at all. It, to me, it's a stepping stone. It's a tool to further myself and achieve my endeavors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny that you brought up the trash talking, because like when I see someone like you do that on your story, or like you'll put it in like a YouTube video or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, someone like me, I can tell that you're like joking around, not only the tone you're using, but I can tell you're not that type of person like in everyday life. Right. Whereas like, I feel like some people that you kind of like put in there, you know, they might take it seriously, but at the end of the day, like sports, you know, it's for fun, especially because powerlifting, there's no money in it unless you're like competing at like, I forgot, I think the Sheffield meet, that's the one that had like a big grand prize, but you know, it's an amateur mm-hmm. sport. Everyone's just in it for fun and to get better. So yeah, just funny that you brought that up.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think that powerlifting is something that can grow into a very big sport. And, you know, although I said that I dissociate myself entirely from the banter and things of that nature, it doesn't necessarily mean that anything I say is a lie, right? I do believe, well, everything I say, it has a little bit of truth in it. Yeah. But that's necessary. And for those of you taking it way too seriously, there's nothing I can say to convince you that I don't take it that seriously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is what it is. It's helped me grow my following. And you could argue that's part of my personality. So I'll let it be.
100%. Yeah. What about like comments saying, you know, just calling you on depth or like how long you paused on a bench? You know, those like no name accounts that, you know, just nitpick at everything. How you mm-hmm. gone about like dealing with that? And like, how do you feel about that in general?
You know, funny enough, I think I don't get as much of those comments, right? Whereas, you know, Russ might get a lot of comments on depth. Other people might get a lot of comments on not pausing their bench enough. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'd like to think of myself as a technician when it comes to the squat, bench, and deadlift.
Yeah.
You know, so the things that I do get a lot is wearing straps. I guess that's pretty much it. Maybe pulling sumo or going low bar, but nothing really.
Yeah, no, I've seen the sumo comments quite a bit. They'll be like, oh, I can do this much conventional. I bet you can't do it either. But it's like, you know, I look at that, I'm like, yo, this guy's been at the world level. He competed at IPF Worlds, whereas this guy was like, you know, talking the trash, you know, what's he done kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a part of the game. When you get just that tiny bit of clout, people start getting jealous, right? They envy your success or your growth, right? And you see it very often, even in the most influential people, Larry Wheels, Steffi Cohen, you'll always see those type of comments, and they're always going to be the ones that are private or people that are very insecure about their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even for me, like, I don't have a big following at all. Like, I have, like, 1,500 followers or something. And then even, like, on YouTube videos that I post, they get, like, a couple hundred views. There'll always be, like, one guy with, you know, a fake name, no profile picture, just, like, nitpicking at something that I'm doing. You know, it's just kind of funny, and like you said, it's just part of the game. And
Yeah, it's a process, man. And they might not necessarily be jealous of your, you know, your following, but they might be insecure because you're putting in the work to do something like this podcast, for one, spending your time on a Sunday, right? Talking to someone and putting this content out, whereas they might just be sitting in their chairs watching you do that and just hating you for doing something that they aren't doing.
Yeah, 100%. Well, thankfully for the podcast, I haven't gotten any negative comments yet. It's all been positive feedback, but no, the analogy, it's still the same.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I have been doing podcasts lately, right? And a lot of people that have been asking me, I usually just don't have the time, right? We actually scheduled this before and it kind of flopped through. But I got to say, man, your podcast name, it's very unique, very novel. I love it. And when I saw that, I was like, I got to be on this podcast. It sounds cool. It's a really cool name.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Well, you're the first like powerlifter we've got on. I have gotten Alpha Destiny. I don't know if you've heard of him, but you know, he's a fitness YouTuber. But as far as like IPF powerlifter goes, you're the first one on. So,
well, I'm honored, man. I'm honored. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate it. Awesome. So I kind of want to touch up on Worlds and Nationals because I know a bunch of people, well, majority of people actually, you know, they'll either compete at like the local level or state / provincial or like regional, but something as big as like placing at Nationals or placing at Worlds, that's something that a lot of us haven't gotten to experience. So how about you just take us through, you know, how that entire experience was? I guess we can talk about Sweden, IPF Worlds, how that went. How was the prep and overall, like just the experience?
Man, I'm trying to think of ways to make this a very juicy process and juicy story, but just if I have to be 100% realistic, the process was grueling, a lot of time, a lot of effort. The results, lackluster. I came in second. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this. I don't publicize this as many other of my competitors have, but I was injured and I still am injured, but I'm trying to work myself back up to the weight that I was able to pull and squat. Going at the Raw Nationals in, not Spokane, but in Chicago this year, I squatted less than I squatted several months prior. After flying and spending several hours in the car, I squatted more in Sweden than I did in Chicago.
Wow.
And obviously I was injured, but didn't publicize that as much. And yeah, now I'm recovering, I'm recouping, training. It's been a very long off season, but I think I'm at the strongest point in my life that I have been. And this upcoming meet in November, which I plan to compete at SS74, hopefully it's going to be the first 800 kg total SS74.
Hopefully, man. Yeah, I had no idea you were injured.
Yeah. Most people didn't know. You know, people know that Taylor was injured. But a lot of the other guys, including myself, don't like to really use that as an excuse.
Yeah, because I feel like if you're injured and document it, I think you're the one who said this before on your story like months back, but you said like, you know, if you put out that you're injured, if you lose, then you can use that as an excuse like, oh, I was injured. Whereas if you win, you can be like, I was injured and I still won type of thing.
Yeah, I hate it. It's such an excuse. It's such a crutch. I would just rather people know that injuries are a part of powerlifting, and if it happens, it happens, but that's not going to give you any flack for losing or winning or any bonus points for winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because as you get stronger, as your body starts to take on more weight on the bar, injuries, no matter how good the training is and how safe you perform the lift, I feel like something's going to happen. Like for me, like I'm super, like I choose my accessories very carefully to make sure, you know, everything is very balanced, that I don't have any muscular imbalances. I make sure my upper back and rear delts are one of the strongest muscle groups. And you know what? I'll still get like some shoulder knacks here and there. It's just part of it. And you know, you can't really use that as an excuse, like you said.
Yeah.
And before we move on to the next topic, you compete at a 74, but I believe off season, you bulk up to like what, 85, 86, just about?
Not anymore. I did, right? A few months back, I was relatively heavy, but for the most part, people over-exaggerate my weight. The heaviest I've gotten even on season or a few days before swimming was maybe 85 kg. But that comes with the process of gaining weight and losing weight very quickly. You're going to have very large margins when it comes to how heavy you can get and how light you can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ever since because I think it was Worlds, because I was watching the 74 kg juniors, and then the commentator talked about your weight cut. And then ever since then, like, I've been curious, how the hell did you do it and still manage to get the total that you did? Do you want to just, like, shed some light on that?
Man, I'm going to be honest. There's a lot that goes into it. Not too many things I'm willing to go into depth, but I do have a few other podcasts that I've done describing this in detail. Mm-hmm. I do have an article, but in the end, right, it's a lot. It's a lot of things you have to do, a lot of things that you have to cover. And I think the reason why I'm one of the best lifters at cut weight is because I'm able to adhere to these things and make sure that every stone is turned when it comes to performance and weight loss.
Yeah, I can imagine it's very, not just physically grueling, but mentally it would just take a huge toll, and it just takes, I can imagine how much discipline that would take.
Yeah, a lot of the times when you see me grind lifts a week or two before, I'm able to grind relatively heavy weights for quite some time. Whereas when it comes to the day of the meet, right, after 4 hours of losing weight in a hot sauna, it's very easy to give up on a weight that you should hit because you're so mentally drained, right? Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that you have to account for. Another thing that results in poor performance of many lifters that decide to lose weight is because they don't account for these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just goes to show, because on the surface, powerlifting just looks like, oh, like the strongest physical person wins. But mm-hmm. on the surface, like behind the scenes, no one sees how much mental strength it takes to powerlifting. It's as much as a mental sport than it is physical, because the mental is kind of, that's your foundation to carry it forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hey, man, big respect to you. Like, if I had to cut down from 85 kg, I would just compete at 83. I wouldn't even think about 74. Like, for me, like, I was supposed to compete at 74 this year for my meet. Like, I took a year off last year, and this was supposed to be, like, my first meet back. And the heaviest I was planning to get was, like, 78. And then I was going to cut down for a couple months. So the fact that you did it from 85 to 74, that's insane. So big respect to you, man.
It comes to practice, man. I've been doing it for 3 years, and it just gets it doesn't get easier every time, but it's a lot more of a flow pattern once you've done it, like, six or seven times.
Yeah. Eventually, it just becomes, like, routine type of thing, just like prep does or peaking.
It does, yeah.
Awesome. So as far as succeeding in powerlifting, how much do you think genetics take a part, training? Like, what does it take to succeed at such a high level that you've gotten to, for instance?
Powerlifting's a little special. I think it's very hard to get into seriously, right? It's very easy in terms of just, like, doing it as a hobby. But if you want to compete at the highest of levels, you have to be willing to put in several hours a day. Advanced, and obviously invest a lot of money into all this equipment. Mm-hmm. But I would say, if I had to give a certain percentage for those two factors, 30% hard work and 70% genetics, right? I'm a big advocate of, you know, sometimes you're born with this, sometimes you're not, mm-hmm. right? But powerlifting, like I said, you might have the greatest genetics, but you're not able to, or mentally willing or able to put in that much time and effort and work, which would account for the 30%. So I'm not going to say I have the best genetics for powerlifting, especially for my weight class. I'm probably one of the taller ones in my weight class at 74. Mm-hmm. The majority of people in that class are probably closer to 5'5", whereas I'm sinking around 5'9". But I would say that my work ethic makes up for that lack of genetics.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, for me, for instance, I compete at 74 at the moment as well. And, like, mm-hmm. I'm 5'11", but then again, like, I'll compete at, like, local or regional or provincial, but in the States, it'll be, like, state level. Mm-hmm. I haven't competed at national yet. I haven't even thought about worlds yet, but I can imagine, like, at my height of 5'11", because this is just how I was born, I would have to, like, bulk up to, like, what, 93 to be really competitive, because, you know, a lot of those guys at that weight class are going to be taller. Whereas like in our weight class 74, like you said, the guys are, they're shorter just because leverages and stuff.
Yeah. I would argue that the heavier you are, the less that height matters. Whereas, you know, you'll see the lighter weight classes dominated by very, very lightweight people. Whereas, you know, the 83 or maybe 93 kg and above, you'll see random world champions that are 5'10", 5'11", 6 feet plus.
Yeah, I agree. And like, as far as genetics go as well, you know, it's all about leverages. Like for me, I'm, you know, tall, a bit lankier, long arms, long legs. Like I'll do really well in the deadlift without even trying. Whereas like something like the bench, that slows down a bit, especially because, you know, being lankier with longer arms, my rib cage and my upper back thickness, it's not going to be as good as someone with, you know, shorter torso, big rib cage, big upper back, shorter arms. So it all comes down to that as well.
Yeah. Part of the reason why I would say that I'm so technical in most of my lifts is because I know that I need to be the best in terms of form to even keep up with the top lifters in the 74 and 83 weight class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it was Dave Tate. He said when it comes to lifts and failing lifts and trying to get better at them, it's either a technical weakness that you have, a mental weakness, or a muscular weakness. And for majority of people, it's going to be mental or technical. Mm-hmm. So it's really good that you focus on the technique side of things, because the smallest tweak in form can literally instantly add weight to your lifts. Like for me, for instance, one good cue that I gave myself for the squat was on the way up, just, you know, put my eyes up and kind of drive with my chest, because, you know, if you look down, then, you know, there's a higher probability that you might like lean forward and stuff and turn it into like a good morning squat. And when I started implementing that, it was like instant increase.
Yeah, good. That's definitely one of the cues that I also tell my own athletes, not necessarily keeping your or pushing up with your chest, but having a slightly more upright head to back angle.
100%. And like, if I, just like for the audience, if I can give like one bench cue that a lot of people aren't doing, it's perfecting their leg drive.
Yeah, that's huge. That's, if anything, the majority of people that isn't really in tune with the powerlifting community. They think it's a strictly upper body movement. It's not.
Yeah, it's a full body movement, just like the rest of the power lifts. And like I say, like, hey, if you want to just work your pressing muscles, then go do a floor press where it's literally just your pressing muscles. But if you're on a bench, then, you know, with your feet planted and, you know, use that, like your lower body, it's literally half your body. So you may as well use it during a lift like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So just, you know, we're almost done here. So just to almost wrap things up, I want to talk about balancing school and lifting, because like you said, you're trying to become a physician, you're trying to get into med school. I can imagine that you spend a lot of time, you know, studying, attending lectures, doing assignments, all that stuff. Because, you know, a lot of people that come to me back when I used to like write programs and do a bit of coaching as well, the one common, one issue that people come across is, you know, I don't have time because I'm busy with university, or I'm busy with college, or I'm busy with that. So for someone like you who was able to make it as far as you did in powerlifting and being in probably one of the hardest programs in school, how are you able to balance everything?
Here's the thing, man. When it comes to performing at a high level, whether it's being at the top of your class in undergrad, scoring in the 90th percentile for the MCATs, or even being within the top five of the USAPL, it's not about balance. And I know people don't want to hear that, but if you want to be the best that you can be, you have to prioritize, right? Mm-hmm. I told you I didn't necessarily focus on powerlifting for a lot of college, whereas I started succeeding in my senior year of college, though my grades started dropping just a tiny bit. Yeah. You know, first 3 years of college, I had a 4.0. I did everything I could to perform well in school academically. Mm-hmm. And then that last year was the year that I went to Worlds and Raw Nationals, and I devoted a lot more time into powerlifting. And here's the issue when people say that they don't have time, is that that's a perfectly valid excuse as long as you're devoting your time to what you say you're devoting it to. Mm-hmm. But the issue that you see here is that most people that say that have time because they're going out to parties, they're watching TV shows, and they're not putting the amount of work they should be. And that's why you see all these people, they're essentially the master of none. They could be okay at everything, but they're not going to be proficient and at the top of the level at like one or two certain things.
Right.
So it's not about balance. It's about priority and taking responsibility and being disciplined.
Yeah, man. I think that's the best answer you could have given, especially where you said like, you know, it's a valid excuse as long as you devote time to what you said you're busy for. Like, for mm-hmm. instance, I know a friend, he knows who he is. Like, he's just like, he was trying to get into med school. When he was studying for his MCATs, you know, that's all he did. You know, his social life, he didn't go out as much. He wasn't as active in the gym. He was literally just studying hours every day. But I know a lot of other people just are like, oh, like, I'm busy because I have work or I have school. But then on their off time, you know, they're watching Netflix or going out to parties or, you know, just doing just leisure activities, whereas they could have just spent an hour or 45 minutes at the gym trying to better themselves, work towards mm-hmm. their goals.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. So just to wrap things up, I want to talk about mindset and stuff. So if you have any tips for the audience, so, you know, what helped you in your entire powerlifting career to keep going forward, maybe when things started stalling or when you got injured, building discipline, because obviously mindset and mental game is a big part in anything you do, whether it's lifting, entrepreneurship, school. So what general advice could you give in that regard?
You know, if I have to just sum it up into a few sentences, I try not to wait for opportunity and I try to create opportunity, and that I, you know, whether it comes to my businesses or lifting, I try to apply it to everything that I do in life, right? For example, let's say you're working with an injury and you're trying to get over it, right? Create a plan to, you know, resolve that issue, right? Take the initiative to reach out to a physical therapist, right? Don't be complacent and don't wait for things to just get better. Make them get better, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with, you know, business, right? Don't wait for the opportunity to come to you, right? Be the guy that develops the idea and puts a plan into action, and then those opportunities will come, but you have to start by developing them yourself, right? So that's the biggest advice I can give. That's how I run my own life. And I would say that's how I've gotten to the point that I am at now.
Yeah, definitely agree. It's the same principles I live by. It's that taking action basically trumps all.
Yes.
Yeah, because like I know a lot of people, let's say like if trying to start a business, they'll go on Google, they'll do a bunch of research for like a few weeks, a month, a couple months, whatever it may be, but they're not taking action to actually using that information. Like information, we can only do so much with it. You know, if we have information engraved in our head, but we're not putting it to use, then it's pretty much useless.
Yeah.
Awesome. And, you know, if you want to just like plug in your businesses, so the Lead Tribe, your coaching, all that stuff, if you want to just like kind of run that down for, you know, the last couple minutes or so.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anyone's interested in coaching, I do offer virtual coaching, very focused on powerlifting, but also for general fitness on my website, www.theleadtribe.com. There I also offer programs, and then a little bit of insight as to other things that I'm working on August 1st. I do have mouthpiece releases, right? Mouth guards for powerlifting. Although in the future, we're planning on expanding to figure eight straps as well as other varieties of mouth guards that might be catered specifically to certain sports such as weightlifting and powerlifting. And last but not least, my Instagram is @pugthegoat. Same thing for YouTube. And I like to create content there. And if you guys are interested, just go ahead and reach me at those ads.
Awesome. And the clothing line, are you still working on that?
Not for the time being. I just, in my opinion, it's a little bit too much work for not enough output. But in the future, I might get back into it.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. You got yourself busy with the mouth guard and all the other stuff. So, you know, you're keeping yourself busy. Awesome. Yep. So very last question. I ask this to every single guest I have on here. It's what are your goals for the future? And when I say future, it's a bit of a big range, anywhere from like 1 to 10 years. So we're talking a bit longer term here.
Let's see. Just success in my business endeavors, as well as becoming the number one USAPL and IPF lifter in the world in IPF points, which hopefully and realistically could happen in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that is to grow the community itself.
Awesome. Yeah, 100%. Well, I've no doubt, you know, with the direction you're going, that, you know, you're going to reach all the goals that you set for yourself. All the guests that I have on here, you know, they're people with direction, they're people with ambition, and all the goals they set for themselves, it has a lot of potential. So all the best with that, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Of course, of course. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Richard, it's been a pleasure. I had a lot of fun recording this with you.
Yeah, likewise.
Awesome. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope you got a lot of value out of this, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you did, go ahead and subscribe on whatever platform you're using to listen, and I'll catch you guys next Monday.